justice with the time. I think Robert did so well because he actually went about 10% faster even than he normally does. So if I do the same, then we should get there without any trouble. Let's turn to the scriptures just for a second, and we'll read one verse, the book of Isaiah, and chapter 41, and we'll read it verse number 10. I'm not going to expound a breakdown of Isaiah or even look into the sections of it. Most of you know that Isaiah does divide in two, and the second section, which we often call the gospel section, starts at chapter number 40. Same division as the Old and New Testament. So we're just moving in to the second section of Isaiah, verse number 10. Fear not thou, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. We'll read verse 11. Behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing. They that strive with thee shall perish. Verse 13. For I, the Lord thy God, Jehovah Elohim, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. We trust the Lord to bless the public reading of his word. I read that verse for a reason. Because during the early days when the Lord was speaking to our hearts, and Robert emphasized it was a partnership, so I'll try and not use the first person pronoun. It is a partnership. We are together in the work of the Lord. In fact, it's a trinity. Because it is my wife and myself. I got that right. And it's also, even before that, it is the Lord himself. You see, we do nothing in our own strength. We do nothing with our own cleverness. We do nothing with our own ability. You see, that man Robert, he's a very clever man. He's a very quirky man. He sees things in places that I couldn't see them, and he writes some very... Yes, but it's sanctified capability by the power of the Spirit of God, not the flesh. And we only can ask the Spirit of God to bless things that are done humbly in fellowship with the Spirit of God. This verse that I have read, fear not thee, for I am thou, for I am with thee. Oh, you say, well, that's only applying to one person. No, it's not. It applies to two. Because there was a day in our experience back in the year 2001, 24 years ago, when the Lord put that verse upon my heart and my wife's heart. On the same day, at the same hour, in two completely different places. I came home and I told her, the Lord has confirmed my call through a verse. Well, she said, that's very interesting because God did the same thing with me today. I said, oh, that's nice. You tell me your verse first because you're the lady. So she took me with a small tiny Bible. She took me to this verse and she said, what's your verse? I said, I've nothing else to tell. I said, what do you mean? I said, because my verse is the same verse. I was in business, I was in management, I was closed in my office and the phone off the hook, old-fashioned phone off the hook. She was at home as a mother and a housewife with the kettle on making tea. I had a little pocket Bible in my work, she had a pocket Bible at home, both reading the same time. Same minute to the same hour, to the same verse. Only God can do that. That not only confirmed in us that God wanted us to be separated, Acts chapter 13, to cut ourselves off from two separate careers and members of our family and take ourselves and our younger kids off to where the Lord called us to work in Africa. And we went out and we went back and forward for a time getting things organized, papers organized, permits organized, schools organized, a house organized, an assembly arranged, letter of commendation. All of that took 2 years. We had to be patient. But there came a day when we waved goodbye to all our friends. Some of them, they're now already home with the Lord. Old missionaries and old friends that came to see us off at the airport. Bob Neal, his wife Esme, Tom McNeil, well known here. They came to the airport in Belfast to wave goodbye and see us off. They're gone home. By the grace of God, we're still here. And you don't say that lightly. We went to Africa. We actually flew out on the 1st of January 2005. We flew on New Year's Day because the tickets were half the price. That was good economy, you know. Economy was essential, but that's another story. And you know what? We had shipped a certain amount of stuff out in a 20-foot box. Sea can, they call them nowadays, containers. We never thought to see one of those things come home. That was for our children and our kids and bits and pieces of furniture, because out there you rented just an empty shell of a house. And you know what? We came home. And all of those things were given away to people out in Africa. We never saw them again, because we came home at the end of 2013 for our eldest daughter's wedding, the first marriage in our family. And through due process of routine blood tests, my dear wife Helen, who's with me today, in October 2013 was diagnosed with leukemia. There were people in the family and they considered that as a death sentence. My dear friends out in Africa, they thought they would never, ever see her again. When I phoned them up and told them, they wept more tears on the phone than I did. My dear friend Kosi, Dr. Mompati, who was a dear friend, an elder in the assembly, and a medical doctor. He told us last year when both of us, I've been back a number of times, but he told us last year when we both came out together, he said, you know, I've never seen anybody recover, an African, recover from the illness your wife had. And he said the assembly, they prayed for her every day for 10 years, but he said they never thought they'd ever see her again. God's good. And so let me talk just for a few minutes now. Let me talk a little bit about Africa. You can hang that little piece on the little peg of commendation and early days. Don't want to say too much about Africa. Somebody asked me this morning, would I say some things about Africa? Because Africa, it's a little bit historic, you know. We were there by the grace of God in 2023. I hope to go, if the way is open all right, in September and October this year, back out for some conferences and visit our old assemblies and what have you. We had a wonderful time in those early years. And we thought those years would be the rest of our life. The Lord opened doors in prison work. That started actually immediately we set foot and were received into the assembly in Francistown. We were told there was an immigration prison out in the bush, about 20, 30 kilometers out east. It was not just an immigration prison, it was a prison for illegal immigrants. Now, some of those people had not arrived illegally, just to explain. Some of those people had come in from Zimbabwe. They had crossed the border with their papers, but they had eaten their papers to dispose of them. So there was no possibility of being arrested and being sent back. So you can't send a man back to a country that you can't prove that he came from. Now, I don't have time to go into the reasons why they didn't want to go back. It would have been death to go back because of what they had come from. So these men, as soon as the paperwork could not be produced for whatever reason, they became illegal immigrants. And the government in Botswana resolved that problem by building a processing prison on the outskirts of Francistown, run by the army, and then they also built a permanent camp 130 kilometers away in the bush. And there were 26 nationalities in that camp. Something like 25, 26,000 people. The Lord opened the door for us to go into the Center for Illegal Immigrants. The guys that were in there used to call it the Illegal Center for Immigrants. You know, they had a sense of humor even along with their incarceration. I tell you this, I can't stay with it. Some of the things the Lord did in those two places, my wife was involved majorly in the big immigration camp. We started up there. How we got from one to the other is a whole story in itself. And the Lord saved souls in both places. We started a Sunday school in the big camp in the bush with three children out of one house, which was a contact we had had from Francistown. A family who had got a good behavior permit to go out and come back. We had met the kids and the mother. And so we made contact with them in the camp. And we started a Sunday school with a flip chart and some marker pens. And one single chorus. We had to teach them a tune because they didn't know it. And a mother and three children, a daughter and her two brothers, under a tree in the middle of the camp. That Sunday school grew to just under 500 children. Almost every single child in the camp. There were more children at the Sunday school than there were in the local primary school inside the camp. And the primary school in the camp was run by the Education Board of Botswana. And teachers were sent under contract to actually be imprisoned in the camp for a period of years to teach the children. And so they absolutely hated being there. And because they hated being there, sadly, they hated the children they were teaching. I remember one Wednesday, about 10 children turned up. 500 the week before. Oh, dear. My heart was right down in my boots. You know, I'm just human like everybody else. I said to my wife, "What's wrong?" She says, "Don't know." And of course, we started with three, so half a dozen. Well, we just... And then we asked them, "Where's everybody else?" "Oh, the teachers padlocked the school gates. Everybody else is locked in school to do extracurricular activity. They couldn't get out. And that's what they're going to do on Wednesdays. They're going to make them stay. Not voluntarily, no, they're going to lock them in and keep them right through until after you leave." I said, "Well, leave it with the Lord. There's nothing we can do about it." I thought, "Do we change the day?" And I said, "Well, you know, they'll do the same thing over again." So we left it with the Lord. We came back the next week. And there were six or seven children there waiting for us. By this time, the authorities had given us a tin shed. Because you were talking about 45 degrees or thereabouts in the summer. And the children came and they came and they came. Now, it took them longer to come. They came and they came and they came and they came until almost the whole 500 was there. And I checked the school on the way in, you know, and the gates were padlocked. So I said to some of the older kids, "Can you explain what's going on today?" "Oh, yes, Pastor Dave. We can explain. Since you were here all last week, we have been like rabbits. We dug a tunnel under the fence at the back of the school. And we all have escaped because we wanted to go to Sunday school more than we wanted to go to listen to the teachers who don't like us. We wanted to hear the stories from the Bible." Isn't that amazing? So you carry those memories with you right down through to now standing here. Those things are real. I could tell you about the first soul that the Spirit of God spoke to through us. Links in the chain in Africa. And she was able to come and tell us she had trusted Christ. You know, the amazing thing was this. It happened within a few weeks of us going. And it was a young girl from Zimbabwe. She had paperwork. She was able to take on part-time work. Her paperwork allowed her to have what they called peace job. And she came to our house looking for peace job, and I gave her peace job. They used to tell us, you know, don't take on Zimbabweans. I said, "Hey, I work in the prisons with the Zimbabweans. I trust them more than anybody. Because all the Zimbabweans know me. They used to say, if you're in trouble with the authorities, go to Pastor Dave's house." And somebody came to my gate, you know, sometimes they were in trouble, and I opened the gate to talk to them. You were guaranteed the police cruiser was going to come around the corner inside 2 minutes, so I had to go and talk to the police. It's great to have that kind of reputation, you know, that people in trouble can come to your gate, you'll open the gate and let them in. I could talk about that for a long time. Irene came. Could I have peace job? I brought her in. My wife spoke to her, little girl about 19 or 20. I said, "Yes, you can do the washing, you can do the ironing, you can do some gardening." That was the kind of work they wanted, and we gave them a good day's pay. Didn't take advantage of it. My wife had to teach her how to press my preaching shirt, you know. because the last place she'd worked was on a farm. And if I was up in Queensland, they would get this story better, you know. So out right there with the Dutch farmers. The first time she was let loose in my... Marius will know what I'm talking about. The first time she was let loose with a pressing iron on my preaching shirt, she didn't know the difference between a preaching shirt and a farmer's shirt. So when they got back to my bedroom, put in the bed, the points of the collars right here. So I had to tell my wife, you go and sort her out, because I wear a necktie when I'm preaching and the collar must be in here, not away out there to my shoulders, you know. It doesn't button until down here. And you know, there came a day when my wife went to check on her doing her work and said, she's not doing much. The industry has disappeared. She's been in the same bedroom for 2 or 3 hours. And she went and spoke to her and said, Irene, you're not feeling well. She turned around, tears running down her face. She said, no, Mama, I want to get saved. I was in my little study. It was only so wide I could touch the bookshelves on both sides, roll up and down the little stool. She came in, Helen touched me on the back. She said, Irene wants to talk to you. I said, what, Irene, love? She said, oh, Pastor Dave. That's what they called me out there. She said, I want to get saved. What do, you know? I just sat and preached the simple gospel. Didn't over-personalize it, you know, but just preached the simple gospel. And partway through, you know, she put her hand up. She said, stop now. I said, what's wrong? Said, you don't need to preach anymore. I said, why? Here's her words. Listen now. She said, my burden's gone. She said, my tears are dried up. She said, my heart's at peace. She says, I've seen what I need. Jesus is my Savior. He's taken my sins away. It was wonderful, wasn't it? I tell you this, that was worth going to Africa. We'll leave Africa and we'll move on. Let me say a little bit now about, Canada. So commendation and Africa in the early years, and then up to Helen's leukemia and changing our circumstances, coming back home. Because of that, that brings me through to 2014. And then, you know, just after Helen started to recover, I got a phone call from one or two brothers over in Vancouver. An old brother called John Grant, Stephen Grant's father. John Grant was to go to speak at what was to be his last conference. But when the time came, they felt he wasn't able to go. That left a gap right the whole way across a 3-day conference. And they contacted me and said, well, you know, we know that you haven't been so busy because of Helen's circumstances. Are you free in your diary? Could you come? I said, well, I could. They said to me, don't book your plane tickets for a long weekend. If you space, because the price won't change, come for a whole month at least. I said, well, the conference is 3 days, but if you think I should come for a whole month or 5 weeks, well, I'll do it. So I did. Told Helen I'm going to Canada for 5 weeks for a 3-day conference. Well, she trusted me, you know, because she knew how much I traveled in Africa, up into Zambia and Namibia and Zimbabwe and South Africa and all over. She knew the Lord had filled my hands and put me behind the steering wheel. I love to drive. It's my relaxation. I'll drive anywhere where there's a road. And if it wasn't for the sea, I would drive to here from Ireland. It's not that I don't like flying, I do. It's not that I don't like sailing, I do. But I love driving. It's my relaxation. We were in Canada last year. Helen was with me. We had the use of an RV that the Lord provided, and we did 10,000 kilometers in 11 weeks. And it wasn't in the slightest a hardship, because to join up assemblies that are 800 and 900 kilometers apart, you see, you think you're isolated down here. Well, you know, brother, we have to get from Wellington across to Picton, and then you have to drive the whole way down here. And the people up there in Auckland, they think we're at the other end of the earth. And the people up there in the Gold Coast, they hardly know we're here, Invercargill. And the people in the UK have never heard tell of us unless their ancestors came here from there. I'll tell you something. If you were in an assembly here in Mornington, and the next nearest assembly to fellowship with was 1,200 kilometers away, man, talking about physical distance on the road. you would understand how important it was to develop gift in your own assembly and look to yourselves for growth and development and potential. Even you convened a conference. If your nearest assemblies, north, south, east, and west, were 1,000 kilometers away, well, it'd be long-distance visitors if they turned up at all. And don't say they can all fly in, because I'll tell you this, because of the oil industry and tar sands and all those things, regional, internal flying, in the west of Canada, some of the most expensive in the world. About 4 times the price of driving on the road. The Lord opened wonderful doors for us in Canada. Right up until last year. Now you see, we understood the Lord opened the door in Africa for 10 years. I've been back in Africa 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. And then there was a gap because I wasn't well in 2019. Then there was COVID in 2020. Then I was back again. Then Helen and I were back together in 2023. And in the will of the Lord, I'm going this year. So our African journey has continued, but not our residence, not our primary focus. And so the Spirit of God opened doors in Canada and began to travel, began to preach, to cover great distances, to visit lots of little assemblies. We were in an assembly last year, maybe 1 or 2 or 3 assemblies last year, way up, I'm talking above the Rockies, some of the most northerly assemblies in Canada. Maybe at least 2, maybe 3. You know what they said? Brother, since such and such a brother, and he wasn't native now, he was a man who came from Scotland to Canada, since such and such a brother went home to be with the Lord, we haven't seen a visiting preacher since. And that brother's gone home to be with the Lord 8 years ago. Now you imagine, right? Just apply that again. I mean, whether you like us or not is not the point we're here. Isn't it lovely? You know, it's so many of the Lord's servants. And Robert emphasized how well we get on together, and so we should. It's great. And to listen, and there's so much overlap even in terms of what we tell and what we say and how we minister and preach. Can you imagine an assembly? I've been to them in Africa. I've been to them in Canada. I've been to them sometimes even in the far-off islands of Scotland. I say, brother, the last, not social visitor now. Oh, your cousin will come and your brother-in-law will come. The last preaching visitor we had was 7 or 8 years ago. You know, we need to keep in mind, you know, I'm speaking to myself and Robert and Sam. Marius, well, he's a local brother when he's here, especially when he's here. We need to keep in mind there are places. It takes a little bit of effort. Little bit of extra expense. You got to work with your suitcase. You got to listen to your wife telling you that she can't cope with 20 kilograms. I know all that stuff. I know what it's like, Sam. I've been there and done it for years. And you know, through one airport and then through another. And losing a night's sleep in an airplane. Some people can do it and some can't. And adjusting yourself over 7 and 8 hours of time zones. And struggling to speak to your family because they're 12 hours away, never mind 12,000 kilometers. It's worth it. It's 1,000 times worth it. Spurgeon said, C.H. Spurgeon, he said many a good thing, and he wasn't in the assemblies. Spurgeon was a great one-liner. Spurgeon said, if there was but one sinner left, listen now, if there was but one sinner left, and he be, I'm quoting him literally in his Victorian language, and he be in Siberia, one sinner, it would be worth the movement of all saints to go to take the gospel to him that he might be saved. That was before jet aircraft. That was before modern travel. Carbon footprint. I'll tell you something, dear brother and sister in Christ, dear young person, the Spirit of God cares nothing for carbon footprint. It's a concoction of men anyway. The Spirit of God wants men who are willing to go without limitation to where there's sinners who are in need. Might not be Antarctica, because there's no salvation for the penguins. That where there's men and where there's souls and where there's humans and where there's people still outside of a lost eternity, the commission is upon us to go. But they might hear the gospel, for they might never get another chance. And keep that in mind when we come to the gospel this afternoon. I'll have to leave Canada because I don't have so many minutes left. I want to give Sam his due time. Because I want to, no, brother, I want to hear about India. I'd love to tell you about a young man. I'll tell you just in 2 minutes about a young man in Canada. Because, you know, a strange pattern developed in Canada. Robert told us about, maybe it's a Canadian thing, brother. Robert told us about people getting saved after the meeting's finished. Then he comes home and hears about it. I can tell you the same thing on the other side of Canada. You know, we're used in Ireland to people telling you they've got saved while we're preaching. But over in Canada, it seems to be that they think about it, the Spirit works, and after you go away, and the preacher stops preaching, and he doesn't get the same credit. Then the Spirit of God works when the preacher's voice is silent. I think I prefer that, you know. Numerous times in Canada, I've gone back maybe to the same assembly. No change. Anybody got saved since I was here last year? We're back again for more gospel meetings. Maybe a different partner, but we're setting up again, visiting the same houses. Well, brother, we're still praying. Week of prayer meetings before the gospel starts. That's a good thing. Young man's at the prayer meeting. He's at the prayer meeting now. He's got his own car. He was learning to drive last year. Now he's got his own car. Now he's got the plates you get in Canada that says, I'm legally on the road, but you still got to watch me. I forget what the letter is. So I was admiring his little Toyota. And I'm thinking, did he come to the prayer meeting just out of novelty because he's now got a car he can commute? Because as far as I was concerned, he wasn't saved. So I got the hold of him after prayer meeting, you know. Start to snow, late autumn. Lovely little white Toyota coupe. I went over and admired his mags, as they talk about. Admired his car. He was smiling at me. I said, Roman, what's been happening since I was here last? Oh, he said, I got a good job. Oh, I said, that's great. He said, got a new car. He said, you see that? I said, that's good. Got a license. I said, that's good. He said, anything else? Well, he said, what else would there be? I said, no, you tell me. No, nothing else. I said, you sure? I says, Dave, what are you asking? I said, I'm not asking anything, I'm just asking. And he studied his feet for a wee minute, and he looked up. He says, you know, Dave, 22nd of December last year, in the middle of a snowstorm, walking on the footpath beside the river, he said, I trusted Christ. How did you know? He says, son, it's written all over your face. I said, who knows? He says, nobody. I said, does your daddy know? He says, no. Does your mommy know? No. I says, why not? And he says, I wanted to be sure before I told them. I says, son, don't you get in the road. Because you're 40K to go home. And I said, if you'd an accident on that 40K, I said, what would they think? I said, get you back inside where they're talking. And I said, you tell your folk. If you're absolutely sure, you confess Christ before the company inside. I tell you this, before the end of the gospel meetings, he went to see the elders. He asked for baptism, and they baptized him on the last night. And the crowd at the baptism was bigger than the previous year's conference. Absolutely wonderful. It's not to our credit. It's not for our glory. It's the work of God. But we love to see it. I'll say a little bit now, just 2-3 minutes. I'll say a little bit about things post-COVID. And that'll bring me up to current things as well. COVID was a strange thing, wasn't it? I was glad to hear a lot of things that Robert said, you know, because I think some of my dear brothers in the Lord, they treated COVID as a great confusion and a burden and a problem and all kinds of things. And I don't mean it from a personal point of view. I had come out of a year of sickness. And so 2020, I saw the Spirit of God lifting my personal burden off me. So I didn't feel the restrictions maybe that some other people did. And the Spirit of God put me into, first of all, a YouTube ministry, and then from that, of course, into a writing ministry. And the YouTube ministry blessed thousands of people because of lockdown. There was no meetings. Our own assembly asked me to start it. And I started it for them, and then other people, they asked for copies of the videos, and I was doing recordings specifically for assemblies. Then I was uploading and posting them, whole series on different parts, the book of Acts, and the book of Genesis, and the book of Ruth, and the book of Esther. And then eventually I got a request from way down this part of the world, way down here. And they said, you know, our young sons, they're disturbed about things that's going on around them. And they're looking for Bible teaching on YouTube about end times. And all they can find is John MacArthur and David Jeremiah and all kinds of stuff. It's way over their heads. And they're not assemblymen anyway. Is there any possibility, Brother Dave, that you could put something together like, you know, Bible class, Sunday school videos for children for end times? I said, I never thought about it. So I went and thought about it, discussed it with Helen. You know, when you present those things before, I know from experience, her answer is always yes, you know. So that's a good idea. Go and think about it. You're perfectly capable. Do it. The Lord will help. And so we did. That series started. It ran for 26 weeks. I uploaded a video every week. Some of those videos have had thousands of views. And then from that, Richie's, of course, Richie's that Robert was talking about, they approached me and said, could we have the transcript? And could we turn it into a book? I said, not really, no. I said, I'd like to write the book myself, and I'd like to pitch it away up, because I had nephews who just were coming out of college, and they had been battling for years in college with Reformed thinking about future events. Not five-point Calvinism, no, but future events in relation to Calvinistic Reformed thinking. No rapture of the church, no seven-year tribulation, no thousand-year kingdom, no distinction between the church and Israel. So they said, can you pitch the book at graduate level? Well, it took a lot of time, took a lot of effort. It took a very strong editorial panel. I was heavily under control. But by the grace of God, the book was published, and it's just gone into its fourth reprint. From that came the little book that most of you have got a copy of. I think there's only one copy of the big book left. Most of you have got the little book. It's also in its second reprint. There's something like 25,000 copies of it that's gone out inside the last 2 years. It was then translated into Portuguese. One of my countrymen, Crawford Brown, was in charge of that. 20,000 copies in Portuguese. It's currently in translation into Spanish. Willens Alcala is in charge of the team who's doing that. And it's also being translated by a group of believers in the assemblies in Germany into German. And two full-time brothers, Silas So and Thomas Yu, that I met up in Hong Kong in February, they already had copies of it, and they were very excited to discuss it with me. And they said, Brother, do you think you would permit us to translate it into Chinese? I said, do you think I wouldn't permit? And so by the grace of God, it's also in process into modern Chinese. So that's Spanish, German, Chinese is in translation, those three languages. That gives you something big to pray for. Because when you add all of those languages together, I'm sorry, Brother Sam, we haven't started work on Hindi yet, so if you say anything about that, I'll throw it back to you. So you better be careful. So, and that covers all the major languages in the world. And God has blessed. I don't take credit. God has blessed the little book. And that brings me up then to current things. That allows me to stop, and I'm absolutely just on time. Current things. You know, our youngest boy, some of you know him, many of you don't. He's been away from the Lord for a number of years, but he always kept in touch. He came right down to Queenstown, but he kept in touch. Now he's up in Auckland, but he kept in touch. And then last year he said, Dad, I've been 10 years out here and you've never come to see the land that I call home. He's got his residence. He'll be a citizen next year. He said, you got to come and buy your tickets. You're coming to see me. I'm not taking no for an answer. You know, I don't mind admitting, Helen knows my heart. I kind of had a conscience. All that money being spent to go to the other side of the world, it's not about preaching. It's not about gospel meetings. You know, Helen had to counsel me. She said, you know, he's our youngest boy. He's our baby.
He's away from the Lord. We haven't been out there for 10 years. He's feeling it. We got to maintain that. We got to try and shorten the rope. We got to go. We did. I tell you this very humbly, the Lord used that. The Lord used the burden on him to bring his parents out to see the land that he has come to love. The Lord used that to bring us here. Not only here in December, in January, but back again here now. To take us up to Hong Kong in February, because the brethren from Hong Kong, when they heard we were coming to this side of the world, said, "You'll come up for our conference." And then an invitation to Queensland, because they heard we were in Hong Kong. And then invitations to come back to the North Island and the South Island. You know, Christmas Sunday, we were up in Takapuna with Simeon. How the Lord closes little loops, you know, thinks in the chair. And Simeon Dudley, a great old friend. My, the boy I'm talking about grew up with Simeon's kids way back 20 years ago in Africa. And Simeon invited me to Takapuna for Christmas Sunday. The whole day. Ministry in the morning, Christmas lunch, carol service in the afternoon, gospel in the evening. And they put a little advert on Facebook, and they printed a flyer and put it around the local doors and put a poster in the window, because this was strange. This was a man who'd never been before. They were having a whole Christmas program. And what we didn't know was our son. Screenshotted the Facebook advert, put it on the news site for his employment in Auckland. And he said on it, "This is my dad and mom, who were missionaries in Africa. They're here on Christmas Sunday. Anybody who would like to come is welcome." There were 9 people came. 9. Including himself and his fiance and his CEO and the managing director and the managing director's mother. Maris and Yvette were there. We were thrilled. Those big men, big businessmen, millionaires, came and listened to the gospel. Have spoken to him about it since. Stayed for tea and discussed it with the ordinary people in Takapuna. And we're just trusting. Links in the jam. Trusting that the Spirit of God can do a further work in this part of the world that we have come to know more of. And by the grace of God, have come.